Quantum mechanics is weird. We talk about weird quantum mechanics today on Mind Matters News.
Welcome to Mind Matters News, where artificial and natural intelligence meet head on. Here's your host, Robert J. Marks.
Greetings. Quantum mechanics is the secret sauce of quantum computing. Google has announced the development of a quantum computer that has achieved quantum supremacy. What is quantum mechanics? What is quantum computing? What is quantum supremacy? We'll unpack these questions today with our guest, Dr. Enrique Blair. Dr. Blair is on the faculty of electrical and computer engineering at Baylor University. He is a United States Navy veteran. He actually was canned up on a little submarine. No, it was a big submarine, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Pretty big.
Big submarine, and as actually taught before Baylor at the Naval Academy at Annapolis. But Professor Blair teaches graduate courses in quantum mechanics and quantum computing, and he's the perfect person to talk to about quantum mechanics and quantum computing. Dr. Blair, how is it to be locked up in a cylindrical tube and submerged in the ocean? I think that would get on my nerves. Did that get on your nerves, or did you get used to it?
Well, it's quite a different experience. You know, the longest time I was underwater and, you know, on the submarine was about 5 weeks. And it means that if we're on mission, we can't communicate with the outside world. So you miss things like popular songs or movies that come out. And it's just like I said, it's a different experience. I guess at the end, the levels of oxygen can get a little bit lower than what you're used to. So then when you come back up and you open those hatches and you get oxygen, people start to get oxygen happy.
Oxygen happy.
Yeah, yeah. It's really quite a thing.
What are the symptoms of oxygen happy? I need some of that,
yeah,
I think.
It's maybe we're a little giddier or something, and it's just fun.
Wow. So everybody's happy when you surface. Yeah, I thought it would be like everybody's just happy to be on the surface.
There's probably some of that too. Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some of the things about quantum mechanics. I got a quote here. It says the great quantum mechanics pioneer Niels Bohr. He was a clever guy. He had a lot of great sayings. He said, "If quantum mechanics hasn't profoundly shocked you, you haven't understood it yet." Quantum mechanics is weird. I think I understand rudimentary quantum mechanics, but even what I know is very weird. So let's talk about what is quantum mechanics. Could you tell me what quantum mechanics is from your perspective?
Sure. You know, like Niels Bohr said, it's really hard to intuit this thing. It's really quite different from our daily experience. So quantum mechanics really is a description of the world at the microscopic scale. And it's really weird because there are things that initially we thought maybe these were particles, but then we learned that they have wave-like behaviors. And there are other things that we thought were waves, and then we discovered they have particle-like behaviors. And
was there a big debate at the time that light was a particle? No, it's a wave. It's a particle. No, it's a wave.
I imagine there were a lot of debates and on how to interpret things. I know that, you know, one of the things that comes up with quantum mechanics is that there's a probabilistic interpretation to quantum mechanics. And Einstein, you know, his work led to our present understanding of quantum mechanics. Like, he explained the photoelectric effect, and to do this, he had to assume that light came in particles, not just waves, because our understanding of light as waves came first. But Einstein, like I said, he didn't like some of the probabilistic interpretation of quantum mechanics, and so that's where his famous quote about God not playing dice came from. So,
and in fact, Einstein won the Nobel Prize for that. He'd never won the Nobel Prize for relativity or his work on Brownian motion or the other great things that he did. It was for his work on the photoelectric effect. But he assumed, didn't he, that the energy of the particles coming out were quantized?
Yes, that's right. That's right. That was his big contribution to the fact that, okay, light can only be absorbed in these packets called photons.
So he started this out, but then he didn't like when they got probabilistic. So what was the next step?
The next step, well, I suppose it was Max Born's interpretation. And honestly, I don't know any of the experiments that really confirmed the probabilistic interpretation, but I know that that is the generally accepted interpretation. It's the Copenhagen interpretation of quantum mechanics.
But, what's the Copenhagen interpretation?
It's that the quantum mechanical wave function describes measurement outcomes in probabilities. Like you can't predict with certainty the outcome of a measurement, which is really shocking because in the classical world, if you have a particle and you know its position and its velocity, you can predict where it's going to be in the next second or minute or hour. Now, in quantum mechanics, the really weird thing is we say that a particle doesn't even have a position until you measure its position.
It doesn't exist.
Not that it doesn't exist, but its position is not defined.
I was talking to our director, Austin Egbert, before you came in, about an old movie called Mystery Men. It's a story about a bunch of superheroes that weren't quite up to snuff. They weren't the Captain Americas and Thors and Hulks of the day. There was like the Shoveler. He was really good hitting people with shovels. But there was one guy who, they asked him what his superpower was. He says, "I'm invisible as long as nobody's looking at me." So that kind of reminded me of quantum mechanics. In a way, it was like he was Quantum Boy or something. You know, he didn't have a position until somebody looked at him. So I thought that was an interesting parallel. The other thing that I really like is there was a physicist named John Polkinghorne, and he was a colleague of, I believe, Stephen Hawking. And Polkinghorne got tired of physics. He went away. He became an Anglican minister. And he came back, and he used physics to explain a lot of the paradoxes that he saw in places like Christianity. One of them is that there seems to be contradictions. And contradictions, he said, are like light being a particle in a wave. And he said, we used to think they were particles and waves, but then we resolved that paradox at a higher level. So he maintains a lot of the paradoxes we talk about, such as free will versus predestination and things, are actually something that seems a conflict today that are actually resolved at higher levels. Polkinghorne's a really, really sharp guy. So let's talk about the history of quantum mechanics. And the big one that I know about, the big breakthrough, is Young's double slit experiment, which again gets us into weirdness. What was Young's double slit experiment?
Sure. Young's double slit experiment goes all the way back to 1805, where Young shot light. He had a light beam, I guess. He shot it at a couple of slits, and then the light passing through the slits would show up on a screen behind that. And what we got from that was the light that goes through these slits would create an interference pattern, so you'd have peaks and valleys in the intensity of the light that showed up on the screen.
So it was like constructive and destructive interference.
That's right.
That we see in waves.
That's the only way to describe that. And so the conclusion there is that light is a wave, 1805.
And then we had, what was it, Planck that did the black body radiation?
Yes, that's right. Planck did the black body radiation, and his explanation of black body radiation assumed that light that came from these black bodies could only be emitted in discrete chunks.
And then you mentioned about Albert Einstein and his Nobel Prize winning effort in the photoelectric effect.
Right, yeah. So my understanding of that is, right, so Planck, really, his work uncovered the fact that light could only be emitted in these discrete packets. And Einstein theorized that light could only be absorbed in these discrete packets. And so that's kind of where this quantization came from.
Okay. So this led to the idea of, I'm looking at the notes you provided, wave-particle duality. And that's where the light is both a wave and a particle. But what happened then next? It really gets weird here. I mean, thus far, I think we've talked that light is quantized, that light can interfere like a wave. But then it gets really strange with this wave-particle duality.
Right. Yeah. So the next step here, which is a lot of fun, is, okay, so let's consider we take our beam of light and we're going to reduce it now, because we know it's there are photons involved here. So we can reduce a beam of light so that it's single photons. So one photon is emitted at a time, and we're shooting it at our double slit again. And let's say we put up a screen, maybe it's a photosensitive plate or something. And what happens when each particle of light goes through these slits? Well, each particle splats up against the screen, and so you can know where the photon hits. But if you do this over a long period of time, the interference pattern shows up again. And so you have particles hitting the screen, so we see the particle behavior, but we also see the interference pattern, which suggests that, okay, we've got some wave interference going on here. And so the only way to explain both of these at the same time is that each photon, which is an indivisible packet of light, has to go through both slits at the same time and interfere with itself. And then the buildup of many, many photons gives you that interference pattern.
And so a particle was hypothesized to go through both slits.
Yes, and that's the mind-blowing ramification of this thing.
And so how do we decide which slit the particles go through? Suppose we went down and we tried to measure, we put out one photon, we put it through the double slit. We would try to measure which slit it went through. If it's a particle, it can only go through one, right?
Right. And so that really is that introduces this concept of measurement. Like you said, which slit does it go through? Now, the interesting thing is, if we know which slit it goes through, so maybe we set up a detector and we say, hey, did it go through slit one or slit two? We detect that, we measure it, and the interference pattern goes away because now it's gone through one slit only, not both.
So just by the act of observation, we are restricting that photon to go through one slit or the other. So the observation really kind of screws things up.
That's right. And this is one of the things that is hard to understand about quantum mechanics, because in the classical world that we deal with every day, we can just observe something and we don't have to interact with it. So we can measure something's position or its velocity without altering it. But in quantum mechanics, observation or measurement inherently includes interacting with that thing, that particle. So again, you've got this photon that goes through both slits, but then you measure it and it actually ends up going through one once you measure it.
And this reminds me again of Invisible Boy on the Mystery Men. The photon goes through one of the two slits while you're looking at it. Unless you look away, then it goes through both slits.
Right.
Oh.
Very tricky, those photons.
Yeah, it really is. So this gives rise to, let's see, superposition. What's superposition? What's going on there?
Sure. So there's this concept of quantum superposition, which is really a mathematical description of this. So we use wave functions to describe these particles. So there's a wave function for the photon going through one slit and a wave function for the photon to go through slit two. And to describe it going through both slits, we have a linear combination of those two wave functions. And so you have a more general wave function. And that's the heart of quantum computing, because in classical computing, we have bits like zero or one. And in quantum computing, we like to use these superpositions of zero and one. It's not one or the other. It's something of both.
It's kind of like Invisible Boy. When you don't look, zero and one are both there.
That's right.
Now, there was a big math breakthrough. I think there were two people. One of them was Schrodinger. Who was the other one? Do you remember? The ones that actually presented the theory of quantum mechanics that won the Nobel Prize.
Oh, I am not remembering this.
Okay, one of them was Schrodinger. But anyway, he came up with an equation that described this. So what was the mathematics behind the description of all of this weird property of quantum mechanics?
Well, really, the weirdness of quantum mechanics comes in two parts. So one is Schrodinger's equation, and this describes the time evolution of a system when you don't look at it and when you don't observe it. And then there's the mathematics of measurement. And so that's the one where all the probabilities come out. And oddly enough, there is no mathematical definition that rigorously describes measurement. And it's just, it's one we haven't quite figured out yet.
I remember the other guy that did it was Heisenberg.
Okay.
Made famous in the Breaking Bad, because that's what the head character who developed methamphetamines called himself, Heisenberg.
Okay.
that was his code name. But both, if I remember right, both Schrodinger and Heisenberg came up with a theory. Heisenberg uses matrices and Schrodinger used partial differential equations. And I think they showed they were the same at some point. But both of them gave rise to something called wave functions. That's the solution to the Schrodinger's equation, depending on what your boundary conditions are.
Yes.
And your environment and your initial conditions and things of that sort. Tell us what a wave function is.
So a wave function is an interesting thing. It's a function that describes the state of a quantum system, and it contains everything we can know about that quantum system, but we manipulate these things or we extract meaning from them using quantum mechanical operators. So these operators describe things like time evolution or the total energy of the system or some observable quantity like position or momentum. And the wave function, like you said, it's the solution to the Schrodinger equation, and it's a wave. And so that's where all these wave-like properties come from.
To those nerds that know what a probability density function is, it's kind of a probability density function about a property, such as the position or the momentum, right? Or the speed
That's
of a
right.
particle.
So the wave function itself is not the probability density. You have to take the magnitude squared, and then you get probabilities.
Okay. And you have down in your notes, this helps us discuss the notion of measurement. How does this help us?
Okay, so the wave function, like I said, when you take its magnitude squared, you get the probabilities of various outcomes for measurement when you also use an operator. And so, but really, the stunning thing is that's all you get, is you get probabilities for outcomes. You can't predict with certainty which outcome is going to result when you make a measurement. And that's the subject of one of the papers we wrote recently, is just using quantum mechanics to make something that's a truly random number generator. Because you know well that computers can't generate random numbers because they're deterministic. And so,
which is really surprising, because you see random numbers used a lot, like in old gaming machines, like in casinos.
Right.
And they're not random numbers. They're pseudo-random numbers. They actually use an algorithm.
That's right. Nowadays, of course, though, I don't know how prevalent this is, but people can get a piece of hardware that has a truly quantum random number generator in it, and maybe those are used more in lotteries nowadays. I just don't know.
Yeah, I mentioned to you one of the greatest seminars I have been to was your colleague at Notre Dame who came here and gave the talk. What was his name?
Craig Lent.
And he talked about randomness and the ability of quantum mechanics to generate true randomness. And in fact, this is the only pure source of randomness there is. And he had a random number generator. It's a little unit. And he said you could buy them on Amazon.com. You can go to Amazon.com and buy yourself a real random number generator based on quantum mechanics that really spits out 100% random numbers. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun. I actually have one of those and another type in my office, too.
So when in the quantum world, when you measure something, you kind of mess around with the wave equation when you measure it. And then it collapses in accordance to its probability. Is that kind of the way it is?
Yeah, that's true. Like I said, the Schrodinger equation describes the time evolution of the system if you don't measure it or don't look at it or don't interact with it. But then once you measure it, you get one of these probabilities, and you radically change the wave function from being this thing, and it's in the state that corresponds to the result that you got. But previous to that, it's a quantum superposition of many different states.
And you don't know what it is. Now, you mentioned the Copenhagen theory of quantum mechanics. There's also something, I believe, called the many worlds interpretation, which I find really, really weird. And it's a different interpretation of what happens in quantum mechanics. And it I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but it basically says any time a quantum state collapses, that the universes separate. And you have one quantum universe going in one way where it collapsed one way, and another universe going another way, which collapsed in another way. It means there's a lot of parallel universes. Yes. Is this true? Did I get that about right?
Yeah, I think you got that about right. And that would mean that you've got these branches that are, you know, taking place all the time, and millions of different universes evolving at the same time and branching off into new universes. And, you know, the popular culture has really latched onto this, and you see these things come out in all sorts of comic books and movies.
About parallel universes.
Yes.
Okay. From the quantum splitting.
Yeah.
I think that's really inane. That's,
I have a hard time with it because, you know, just from a scientific standpoint, you can't observe this. So it really just is beyond the realm of science to, you know, science is all about observation. You can't really discuss these sorts of things.
Now, in Schrodinger's equation and manipulation of this mathematics, you mentioned an idea of an operator. How would you describe an operator to a person on the street?
Oh, well, that's a hard question. An operator really is something that transforms a quantum mechanical state, so it transforms a wave function, but some operators are constrained mathematically in a certain way that they describe a measurement process, and they give you, you know, if you use them, they can give you the probabilities of certain outcomes. But yeah.
Okay. We hear a lot about, in popular culture, about Schrodinger's cat. Now, Schrodinger was one of the guys that formulated quantum mechanics. He won a Nobel Prize for it. And he was trying to explain quantum mechanics to a layperson. And he used this idea of Schrodinger's cat to do that. What's the Schrodinger's cat story?
Oh, that is a fun story. So to help out with this, I'm going to quote from a translation of Schrodinger's paper. It was originally in German, so I don't do German. So here's the translation. It says, a cat is placed in a steel chamber together with the following hellish contraption. In a Geiger counter, there is a tiny amount of radioactive substance so that within an hour, one of the atoms decays, but equally probably none of them decays. So we've got a 50-50 chance of getting an atomic decay. If one decays, then the counter triggers and via a relay activates a little hammer which breaks a container of cyanide.
Ooh.
If one has left this entire system for an hour, then one would say the cat is living if no atom has decayed. The first decay would have poisoned it. The wave function of the entire system would express this by containing equal parts of the living and dead cat. So the idea here is, okay, we've got a quantum, these atoms, and they're in a quantum superposition of decayed and not decayed, which means that if we don't look at it, maybe the detector is in a state of detected or not detected, and then the vial of cyanide is in a state of broken and not broken, and then the cat
at the same time.
Right, and then the cat is in a state of dead and alive.
And that's superposition.
That is superposition taken to a very extreme, which we know that's not really possible now, is it?
Well, I don't know. Quantum mechanics is so weird, maybe it is, okay. But it means kind of the cat is kind of half dead and half not dead, right?
Right. Maybe I should say that it's not possible, but we don't really observe something like this in real life.
Yeah, well, you know, before I go home and look at my dog, I don't know if that dog is alive or not alive.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah. But this really relates to your previous point there about the many universes, and this is kind of, you know, one of those things where that comes out.
So my poor dead dog is alive, maybe in some other universe,
yeah,
if he got killed by a car or something. Yeah, and that begs the question, why do we never see such superpositions?
Yeah, right. And that's a really good question. You know, there are a lot of theories behind why this is. You know, it really gets down to the question of what is measurement, right? Because we would like to believe that the cat really is dead or it's really alive. But by this Schrodinger's cat paradox, if you haven't looked at it, then it's both dead and alive. So what is going on here? What is measurement and how does it determine this state? Is the cat dead? Is it alive? And interestingly, there are a lot of theories behind what determines this. And some people have said, well, measurement is what happens when a quantum system interacts with a human consciousness. And I don't know about that one because, what if a dog looks at it? Is the cat still in a superposition? I don't know. It sort of reminds me of that thing of if a tree falls in the woods and no one's there, does it happen? Other theories say that measurement happens when a microscopic system interacts with any macroscopic system. But then you have to wonder, well, where do you draw the boundary between microscopic and macroscopic? And I guess maybe in my mind, one of the leading theories is called quantum decoherence. Well, I mean, that is the resolution here, is that the quantum system interacts with the environment, and these quantum behaviors die away. So you lose the ability to be in a quantum superposition. And it's at a time scale so fast, you don't even have time to set up your experiment. And it's also the case that, the cat and the Geiger counter, these things are macroscopic objects. They don't really behave like this. They don't partake in quantum superpositions. Why is that? It's because they are many, many quantum subsystems, and they lose their coherence or their ability to partake of these quantum properties so fast because they're so complex. And so we just can never see these sorts of superpositions of a live cat and a dead cat because it really has a macroscopic behavior to it. And so you just can't see it.
That is really, really strange stuff. So in a way, just by this uncertainty existing in some environment, it reacts with the environment in some way to begin to lose its coherence.
That's
in
right.
Some fashion. It isn't the observance, it's actually the interaction with the surroundings. Is that
right.
A fair way to say?
I think that's the way I like to think about it.
Okay. Well, fascinating. Dr. Blair, this has been a wonderful conversation. Our guest has been Dr. Enrique Blair. We've been talking about quantum mechanics. On a subsequent podcast, we're going to be talking about more about quantum mechanics. Where is quantum mechanics in your daily life today? What are quantum computers? What was Google's quantum supremacy? What's going on in this strange quantum world? So until next time, be of good cheer.
This has been Mind Matters News with your host, Robert J. Marks. Explore more at mindmatters.ai. That's mindmatters.ai. Mind Matters News is directed and edited by Austin Egbert. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers. Mind Matters News is produced and copyrighted by the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence at Discovery Institute.